Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Today was our community work day, and those of us who were working all day are quite exhausted, especially those of us who were using the whacker, which, if anybody doesn't know what a whacker is, just imagine a deformed, mechanized pogo stick on steroids. And Kondanyo, Summoner Kondanyo, using that, especially tired. And we were redoing the road down to Ajahn Pasano's kuti. And so it's an opportunity to do something for our teacher, to put forth effort. It's good to reflect on the doors that our teachers open up for us, in our case, like Ajahn Pasano, Lungpur Liam, and others. And so anything I have to say is not really from my own experience or realization, but it's just repeating what I've heard, what I've gleaned from my own teachers. And so using whatever they've passed on, they speak about like food for the heart, which is more sublime and nourishing than things that come from sensuality. So like the Dhamma is, it's good to reflect that it's more nourishing for the heart, for the mind, cleansing. Not like things involved with sense pleasures or accomplishing any worldly things. The Dhamma is far more than that, so we try to keep that in mind, and everything we do is in that purpose. So when we do something for our teachers, we do something for Ajahn Pasano, like rebuild his road during the community work day, then that's the just giving a little bit of sweat, giving a little bit of our offering of our energy, and recognizing the doors that he opens for us, allowing us to come here and ordain at Abhayagiri, putting up with our weird habits and tendencies that everybody's has in different ways, being extremely patient with us to train us over the years. And some people figure it out pretty quick. Some people learn fairly quickly, might make progress along the path fairly quickly. But if you're like me, then it's more like long term, like a slow progress, the long slog. And it does get better, but it's slow, painful progress. Rarely is it quick and easy. Sometimes it might be quick and painful for some people, but rarely is it quick and easy. And some people have, doesn't really matter whether you're a monastic or a layperson, the level of Dhamma will be something which abides in the heart. It's not on the outsides of the Buddha, and all of our teachers are always, they're great teachers, always pointing to the heart, not pointing to anything really, not giving more importance to anything other than the heart. And so there's the defilements of mind, ignorance, attraction, aversion, greed, hatred, jealousy, envy, delusion, all the various unwholesome defilements in the heart. And then there's also the wholesome in the heart as well. So the good, the generosity, the patient endurance, the renunciation, the virtue, the samadhi, mm-hmm. wisdom, it's in the heart. But the defilements have been the master for so long that it's going to take all of our cunning to escape from them, all of our wisdom, all of our energy, all of our effort to get away from them. So it takes training. Yeah, training, learning. And it's a training in mindfulness. There's a few of us were trying to think of Longpo Pasano quotes for a shirt that someone wants to make for commemorating his receiving of his Jiao Kun title. And they wanted to have like a commonly used Longpo Pasano quote. So somebody thought of something that he says a lot these days is conjoined, not disjoined. And so like the five aggregates are conjoined, not disjoined. Or like the six sense bases are conjoined, not disjoined. Or the different types of consciousness are conjoined, not disjoined. So that made me think during the meditation that when we practice, it's engaged, not disengaged. So we're actually doing something, in the training, it's important to not be afraid to engage the mind, so not to just disengage. If we just disengage, that's easy, just to avoid what might be painful or unpleasant, but to engage, to be able to engage our thought, engage our mental processes to figure out things, to look, see how we can help. Something Ajahn Pasano used to say in the past, years ago, he would say it all the time, but he doesn't say it so much now, is just like, it seems like it would be almost every morning, he would just say, keep your eyes open. I would like everybody today just to keep your eyes open. And he wouldn't elaborate, he would just say, keep your eyes open. So that has so many meanings. It's look out for each other, but also mindfulness, giving rise to a mindfulness like placed directly in front of one, so that one can act or one can react skillfully to any situation. If we are disengaged, then there might be quite a delay when a situation arises. Might be quite a delay before we come up with some sort of, we sort of have to wake ourselves up, sort of have to rattle the mouse and get the screensaver to get that screen loaded up again before we are able to come up with an appropriate response. So what does letting go mean? Letting go is just appropriate response. It's skillful response. It's getting all of our actions to fall into line with Buddha Dhamma. Because letting go, we can hear letting go, it's kind of vague, amorphous, like what does it mean to let go? So sometimes it's misinterpreted as like a disengagement with the world, but it's really a skillful response. And so that's what we're aiming towards. Or we could say like letting be, but it's not quite that too, because we don't always just let everything be. So there, some things need to be dealt with or reacted to. So it's acting in accordance with the teachings. We have these guidelines. We don't have to figure it out for ourselves. And that's the amazing thing about the Buddha, is that he somehow had the barami and the spiritual qualities to be able to figure it out for himself, what was wholesome and what was eventually leading to liberation. But for us, we have these guidelines. So we have the sila, the virtue, as a guideline for our lives, and so we start to fall into line with that. And that's really what letting go is, because then we start to relinquish tendencies that go against the precepts, for example. So if we're keeping precepts, but we still have a mental tendency to have a desire to break the precepts, maybe we don't break the precepts, but then we still suffer over that. So that's guiding us to fall into line, both not just by bodily and verbal actions, but also by mental actions. If we fall into line with the Buddha Dhamma, with our bodily actions and our verbal actions, but not our mental actions, then there's going to be a dissonance, or we'll suffer over that. So the whole idea with the precepts is then eventually the mind hopefully gives up and just stops resisting. But it's good to see like different qualities, so not to base oneself on like, I've been practicing for so many years, I've been ordained for so many years, therefore I'm at, you know, I should be at this or that level. But just always gauging where the heart is at. I like to think of like various people in my own life who have a, even though they may not be like quote unquote Dhamma practitioners, they still have like a little, some Dhamma in the heart. So like, I think of like my sister, like in high school, like, you know, I wasn't somebody who was popular or well-liked or maybe got made fun of, but then my sister was always sort of there for me and always like spoke in praise of me to other people. And that was always something which was really great and supportive of me. And I didn't feel at the time like I was necessarily worthy of praise or like that anything good should be said about me. But yeah, my younger sister still said good things about me to other people and was always supportive of me just as a person. So I think of that, like, you know, even though she, say, isn't living in a monastery, there's a certain amount of Dhamma that was taking place there. Or like, think of like my best friend from lay life, it was the same thing. So like when nobody else would be there for me, he would be there for me, or just always be available or attentive to whatever I was doing. So there's a certain amount of Dhamma there. And so a lot of people in the world will have this. So this is like the Dhamma of loving kindness or compassion, that real empathy that people can have for each other. I remember when in Thailand, when monk Thanjoti Panyo passed away at Pujumgam, then the day after that, all these Western Ajahns came to Wat Nanachat, and there was a lot of people there, and because I was the one who had found the body at Pujumgam, I suspect a lot of these senior monks were spreading metta to me. And it was something I'd only maybe experienced a couple times before, but I was having the meal at Wat Nanachat, and suddenly I just had started having these waves of bliss, just seeming, you know, I didn't see how it could have been for me because nothing really special was happening, but we were about to eat the meal, and I just started having these really intense waves of bliss, like washing over me. and very physical, but also mentally blissful. And I was kind of looking around the sala, like, who's doing that? Who's spreading metta to me? Is it Ajahn Yanadamo? Is it Ajahn Jayasaro? Is it Lungpur Sumedho? Or is it all of them combined? Is it Ajahn Pasano in America? I just talked with him on the phone this morning. Maybe he's like beaming it like through the earth too. And yeah, so that's these things are very interesting. Like if somebody has very strong metta, very strong metta practice, then it's interesting. You can have an effect. An effect on others. On the flip side, if the anger is really strong, that can also have an effect on others. So you have to be careful. It's like the story of Ajahn Tate. He's been a monk for 10 or 12 years and was practicing Tejo Kasina, which is like a visualizing the red disc or visualizing the fire kasina in the And he saw in his meditation that the next day during alms round, there was going to be someone who was going to try to frame him in terms of there was a woman who was going to, had planned to bump into him on alms round. And so it'd be like a scandal, like he'd making physical contact. And he kind of saw that this was going to happen. And so the next day on alms round, he was ready to avoid the situation and he saw the woman coming in the distance, and he had just a brief thought of anger towards her. And then there was like an explosion of fire in front of her, and she fell on the ground with like a big burn on her chest. And this really scared him because he had been practicing Tejo Kasina, and then he just had this single just thought of anger. And because his samadhi was really strong, then it had a physical effect on somebody. It really sort of shook him up, and he recollected on how powerful the mind can be if it's concentrated. Or like Ajahn Jeff says, like, if you have concentration without wisdom, then what you have is concentrated greed, hatred, and delusion. And then, so you have to be careful. So wisdom is important. But what's also important is to, in terms of like recollecting Dhamma or using Dhamma as like food for the heart, what's important is to just to recollect the scope of the Dhamma. And so, we can cultivate mindfulness, or it can be interesting, or we might relate to the Dhamma as like a passing curiosity, something which might fulfill us temporarily. But it's good to recollect that the Dhamma is something which is leading all the way to liberation, or leading the heart to, as like Ajahn Lee says it in a really beautiful way, like it's the one thing that will allow the heart to attain its eternal wish. So the heart has this eternal wish. So every lifetime after lifetime, there's this wish for permanent happiness. And because there's ignorance and delusion there, then keep cycling on through the rounds of rebirth over and over and over again. And we keep just making the same mistakes over and over and over again. But then the heart has that eternal wish to have this state of lasting happiness, a state of lasting peace, or a place where it can finally rest, but it has to keep jumping and jumping and jumping. So the Dhamma is leading to something which is unbelievably profound and final. And so that's something which is to keep in mind. This is Nibbana Nusati. So it's a recollection of peace, recollection of Nibbana. That's a really important recollection. one doesn't have to have attained Nibbana to recollect Nibbana. If you've attained it already, you don't need to recollect it. you recollect that possibility. And what do we do to actually get there? What do we have to do to actually cultivate mindfulness? What does it actually mean? So what are we doing where we keep tripping up? You know, how are we not yet right? How are we not yet true? So what are the habits? How do we deal with the hindrances? How do we deal with sensual desire? Do we try to annihilate it? Do we push it away? Do we just give into it? Or how do we deal with it? Do we know it with mindfulness and wisdom? Satipanya. So do we know it clearly? Do we see the benefit and the drawback of it? The gratification, the drawback, and the escape? So, taking stock, seeing how do we relate to these things? You know, ill will. How do we relate to ill will? When ill will arises, do we feel guilty? Do we call ourselves a bad person? Do we feel like more ill will towards ourselves for feeling ill will towards somebody else? Or do we give into it? Do we act on it? Or do we know it clearly? Do we know it and see the gratification, the danger, and the escape in ill will? So that's knowing it with mindfulness and wisdom. Mindfulness knows it. Wisdom sees the gratification, the danger, and the escape in terms of ill will. So that's satipanya. So sloth and torpor. So the body might be tired. So like there's been a work day, the body might be tired, but the mind, what's the mind like? Is it engaged or is it disengaged? Or there's tiredness, does one try to go against it? Does one give into it? Or what's happening there? Restlessness, mental proliferation. Does one just give into it? Does one feel guilty about it? Or do we get agitated by it? Or do we know it, see the danger in it? So this is like always trying to apply mindfulness and wisdom. Doubt. So like doubting ourselves, doubting the teachings, doubting should I do this practice or that practice? So the mind is doing circles around just doubt. Or this or that happened, this person said that, and what did they mean? Does that mean they don't like me? Does that mean they do like me? So doubt is a hindrance. Does one try to figure it out? Does one try to come? There's no end to it. There's no end to the proliferation. One know it, one see the gratification, the danger, the escape in terms of doubt. So the Buddha is pointing to these basic things. But then the whole context is Nibbana, is liberation. So these very basic, ordinary things. But then over time, the mind is starting to settle down and more and more not picking up things that agitate it. It can pick up the Dhamma, that's fine. It can pick up wholesome states, no problem. It can pick up the Vinaya, the precepts, that's okay. But what else does it pick up? Does it pick up some rant about that other person who, whatever, did that again or looked at us a certain way? Or so we try to use mindfulness and wisdom to not pick those things up anymore, or to at least set them down after they arise. So like we see like what's useful, what's not useful. And so there's faith, saddha. That's something which is useful. It's like a realization that without like teachers or guides or kalyanamitta, we don't really get much opportunity to practice. Or even anybody who comes to this monastery, it's like it's a pretty strange place. Like we don't actually like charge people to come here. That's like really weird. That's really unusual, really strange. We don't follow that paradigm of capitalism. It's pretty interesting. So do we see that? Do we recognize that? Or do we come here just thinking, what can I get? What can I get from this place? That will still be thinking in a capitalistic way. We're conditioned that way. Or do we think, what can I give? That's a bit more wholesome. What can I give? How can I help? That's pretty nice. That's like the work day. Everybody's just like, you know, how can I help? You know? And everybody's having a good time, smiling, jovial, lighthearted. It's just like no need to be like heavy. We're doing heavy physical work, but felt pretty light. Lighthearted. So this is just like various ways we can reflect on the Dhamma, use the Dhamma, and I think I'll just leave it there. So it's been a long day. Wish everyone success and prosperity in their practice. Okay, I'll leave it there. Sa-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra-ra